Of course, the crowd wants Reed to go for it. Wouldn't be surprised if he did on 4th and 1.
So, anyways, with that, time jerks.
Welcome to 4th and 1. I'm Todd Palmer, joined by Nick Jacobs, and the NFL offseason rolls on here, Nick. Obviously, the Chiefs have some decisions to make coming up about their roster. The NFL Players Association still kind of pushing to wait to see how the TV contracts shake out before we find out what the salary cap's going to be. That could end up actually delaying free agency, or at least, you know, impacting how teams approach free agency. But look, for now, we're going to focus on the Chiefs players that are set to become free, who are out of contract, and what the Chiefs should do with it. If you're looking for information about how the Chiefs can handle the salary cap, things like that, Nick's already got that up. You can check out kshb.com. There's plenty of content out there on that. We've done a podcast about it. So if you haven't listened to it, first of all, shame on you. Second of all, go find it, subscribe, and you can listen to it. Nick, how excited are you for today's discussion and to savage the players that you don't want the Chiefs to resign?
I'm always excited to talk football. I was just hoping nobody heard me grabbing into my bag because those Skittles gummies are addictive. So I don't know if anybody heard that or not, but if you did, just know they are delightful. Okay.
Yeah. So Nick discovered Skittles gummies last week.
Yeah. That's what happens when they put it right there in between the aisles. You walk down before you take a direction left or right to go which aisle. They were right there. It was like it was meant to be between the Skittles and I. So you know what? I bought some, probably gonna buy some more. I'm not gonna lie.
Were you more excited about the Skittles gummies or when NFL rolled out Game Pass?
Oh, dude, Game Pass by a mile. I mean, the Skittles was just a pleasant surprise.
There you go.
So, that was a one-day joy, you know, maybe 2 days. Game Pass, yeah, it's the gift that keeps on giving every day.
So, yeah, no, and for those who are wondering, Nick's already breaking down game film on other pending free agents so that next week we can discuss which of those free agents he thinks are the best fit for the Chiefs and they should sign. But for now, we're going to focus on just the Chiefs free agents. And obviously, the biggest areas of need we talked about, you know, a couple weeks ago are on the offensive and defensive line. So let's start there, Nick, with some of the free agents to be on the offensive and defensive line. I know, look, Taco Charlton is a guy who came on a 1-year prove it deal, got hurt, so he didn't really get a chance to prove it. But is he a guy you can probably get him cheap again, right? So is he a guy you'd take a flyer on bringing back again next year?
If they can, like you said, if they can get him for the cheap, that's really kind of the key of bringing him back. On like a vet minimum with incentives type of deal, nothing that's going to be over $2.5-3 million a year in terms of base salary. I mean, there's certain incentives that you can do that are likely to be earned or unlikely to be earned based on how you want to fluctuate that. What the key is between those two, if it's unlikely to be earned, then those don't count against your cap. If they're likely to be earned, they count against your cap, but you get credited the following season if a player doesn't get to that. So for Sammy Watkins, it just happened this past year. There was a lot of things that were put into his stuff incentive-wise that ended up counting, that should have theoretically counted against the cap. But since he didn't play in a certain amount of snaps in the conference championship or, you know, Super Bowl and all that type of stuff, that those things, those incentives didn't get earned. So then that should be credited back to the Chiefs cap, hopefully, if everything went theoretically right from those type of things. But with a player like Taco, I think that's where you build stuff into where he can get a good payday. You give him the chance to earn a good payday. You put incentives there that make him want to get that payday, but you also protect yourself if it doesn't work out from injury and if he's not the same player. But for me, I would love to see him from a rotational perspective. I think he's a good rotational rusher, and I think he would have helped him at various points during the season after he got hurt, had he been available.
Right. And look, he appeared in 7 games. He had two sacks and a forced fumble along the way. So he was picking up the system and he was making some plays. I think he was, if you got to pick between him or say Tano Passanio, I think you'd take the flyer on a guy like Taco Charlton, right?
Yes. Yes, that's pretty much a slam dunk on that one.
So not to give it away, but Tano falls under the move on from them, free agents, along with where do you come down on Alex Okafor?
Alex Okafor is the guy. I mean, they set up that contract when they did the renegotiation last year to essentially void so he can move on. And that's what they're going to end up doing. He doesn't have enough as a pass rusher, which is what they really needed him to be. I think they always knew he wasn't going to be an elite run defender or a solid run defender. And he struggled with that throughout. Then he had the pec injury last year that didn't help his cause. And then this year he was never a presence that they needed on the opposite side of Frank Clark. So that hurt them a lot throughout the season. So it's just not going to work out with Okafor, in my opinion.
Yeah. And look, they've tried it with him and he was brought in as a guy who could help the pass rush. Right. And he's had moments where he did, but he's also been hurt mostly. He's almost like the Sammy Watkins of the defensive line. Like you just can't count on him because he's not available enough. And when he is in there, he occasionally makes some plays, but he's still limited. So, you know, the upshot there is that if they can get Taco Charlton cheap, then I think that, you know, they have some, you know, they've already got some depth built in, but that's still a place where they're going to have to find some new guys. There's no doubt about that.
Yeah, they need more than Taco Charlton and Frank Clark. They need more of a rotational basis that currently isn't on this roster right now. They still need to get a veteran free agent out there if they can, and they still need to draft a guy or two to try to bring in, and then you hope Mike Dana can kind of show a little bit more athletic ability in this upcoming year, and you hope maybe Tim Ward develops or somebody, but like you just, when you're doing this type of additions, you just can't bank on hopes. You got to go get definitives that are out there on coaches' film.
Yeah, and look, if you're, you know, sticking with the defensive line, Mike Pinnell's a guy that you and I both really felt like during the 2019 season when he was brought in, helped shore up their run defense in the middle, paired well with, you know, with the rest of the rotation, and was a difference maker down the stretch with that defense and into the playoffs. Like he was a guy who would routinely show up and be disruptive and make a play or two in the backfield almost every game. Didn't see that in 2020. Do you think he can regain that form, or is he another guy you just assume the Chiefs can upgrade that spot? So move on.
Yeah. I think you have to move on because you need a guy that can be more versatile in both run and pass. And he's not, Pinnell's never been much of a pass rusher while he's been with the Chiefs, and run defense, he struggled a lot more this year and he got knocked off the ball more than I remember in the previous year. He was a strong, stout run defender the year before. And he wasn't able to regain that form and have that same level of effectiveness. So I think the time's run out on that one.
So now let's move on to the other side of the line, because obviously the Super Bowl exposed the fact that, look, the Chiefs simply don't have enough depth and at pretty much anywhere on the offensive line, frankly. And obviously that was a problem. I mean, you know, when healthy, they were good enough to get to the Super Bowl. But you know, with Schwartz and Fisher down, you know, they weren't good enough to overcome a quality pass rush like the one Tampa Bay was able to put out. Mike Remmers is a guy though, that look, he stepped in for Mitchell Schwartz. And I think he did very well at right tackle when he was filling in for Mitchell Schwartz. I mean, he's the guy who the last half of the season and in the playoffs was manning that spot and helped them get to the Super Bowl. He got exposed a little bit when he had to step in at left tackle for Eric Fisher. He didn't get exposed as much as Andrew Wiley did kicking out from guard to tackle, but Mike Remmers is a guy that I think he was exactly what you wanted from. He was quality veteran depth at the tackle position, who's capable of stepping in a pinch. So he's a guy that I think if you can get him back again on the Taco Charlton thing, if you can get him back without breaking the bank, you know, you like having that built-in depth already on your roster, right?
Yeah, I mean, Mike Remmers is a guy that there's only really one side and one spot on the line you really want him playing, and that's at right tackle. I know they had him at right guard early on in the season and kicked him out to right tackle. He's capable of playing right tackle, and had he been stuck in the right tackle spot in the Super Bowl, he would have had a much better game overall than than what people are perceiving based on what ended up happening in the Super Bowl. I mean, Rimmers is a right tackle. That's where you can tell he's comfortable. That's where his kick step looks his best. That's where I think his punch looks significantly better. He has a certain comfort level moving to that side. Just like I have a certain comfort level, you know, using my right hand for drinking water, or, you know, or shoveling food in my mouth, or, you know, anything, or using it for keys, you know, to start an ignition, you know, even though it's all on the right side to begin with. But, you know, that's my dominant hand for usage in life. So in that regard, I mean, that's kind of the same thing, what it was like for Rimmers when he's playing that side of the line. That's his wheelhouse. That's where he belongs. So, I mean, they did a huge disservice putting him at left tackle, and you could tell, like, it wasn't going to work out. So, I mean, I hope they got that reality check that, hey, let's not put him at left tackle. So in my opinion, they really, if you're going to bring him back, like you said, in the vet minimum realm, I think if you're paying anything over $3.5 million a year, I think that's probably already too much in terms of cap hit. Especially if he's going to end up being a backup. But I mean, you really don't know definitively what's going to happen with Mitchell Schwartz and Eric Fisher. So, I mean, you need another guy that you can rely on to be a tackle if you need him to be. But the thing with Rimmers is, I know he had that back issue during a little portion of the season. So that's something you're going to have to be mindful of, and probably not do a long-term deal with that in case that flares up and becomes a problem.
What about Wiley too? I mean, he's a guy, he's had plenty of chances at right guard. You know, he's not a tackle. He's overexposed at tackle. It's too much space for him. He's not athletic enough to play on the end, I don't think, but he's got a lot of experience at guard. He's played well there in the past, but at this point we're looking at, you know, three seasons ago when he had a pretty good season there. He's a potential restricted free agent. Is he a guy that you think there's enough potential there that you bring him back, or do you just kind of hold on and see what other offers may come for him?
I wouldn't be surprised if they did like a tender on him at the original value or rate. But I'm going to understand if they elect to move on from that, because I mean, like you said, we talked about this on the podcast, heading into it, I was like, it's going to be a mistake if they put him right tackle. He didn't have the quick feet to do it. And they went out and did it, and he got exposed completely on that. And that's just something, like, I mean, that he doesn't have the foot quickness to be able to do that. That's not his fault. That's just where his skill set's at. I don't blame him on that. That's where his skill set's at. That's up to the coaching staff to recognize and not allow to happen and not put themselves in that situation when a Super Bowl's on the line, but they did. So, I mean, and he struggled at right guard a lot this year. He picking up and passing off was a struggle. Turning his shoulders at times was a struggle. I mean, there's just a lot of things at this stage and this level, with as many games as he's played, there's not that growth and that continued development that's got a good trajectory. It's going in the opposite way right now. It's declining to where I personally don't have a lot of confidence in where it's headed right now, but we'll see what the organization does.
Just to play devil's advocate though, like, he had Austin Ryder and Daniel Kilgore, who was one of those veterans they kind of brought in to see if he could add depth. And he was never able to unseat Austin Ryder at the center position. And then you also had Mitchell Schwartz and Mike Rimmers. He had a lot of different moving parts around him, talking about Andrew Wiley during the course of a season. Do you give him a little bit of a pass in that respect that maybe maybe Ryder wasn't holding up his end of the deal, or maybe having, you know, some of his struggles related to having to go from Schwartz to Rimmers and kind of learn how to stay attached to him? I mean, how much of that could play a role in it?
It can for a little bit, but I mean, Ryder, he's worked on the line with Ryder for multiple seasons. So, I mean, at that point he should have comfort level with that. I mean, I get it for a couple of games, but for an entire season to have those issues constantly, for them to get progressively worse as the season goes on, that's you know, as they would say, and JPP would say, that's a you thing.
Yeah. Well, and speaking of Ryder, he's another guy who's a free agent. You know, I don't know that I've seen much. That to me is clearly a place on the offensive line where the Chiefs can and should try to get better this offseason.
If there's only one spot that they definitively have to fix for long term, and have to get this, get it right, is going to be the center spot. Now, I know that sounds ridiculous to say with the tackle situation. You can go out and you can get some tackles short term to get you by until a certain depth gets up to a certain par or something of that nature. But the center position, you need that person to be someone that grows with Pat Mahomes for the next decade and stays healthy, and they build that chemistry together, just like Jeff Saturday did with Peyton Manning. That's what you need for that to have a stability on the offensive line on a regular basis. And right now they don't have that at center. Unfortunately, Austin Ryder can't provide that, and he really struggles. If he goes against nose tackles, he needs help. They got to do a lot of combos to help him out. And there's just a lot of stuff that they either need a much more experienced veteran center, or they need a younger guy that's got a ton of upside that can grow with Patrick Mahomes. But either way, they got to do something different at center than what they've been doing.
Stefan Wisniewski, another guy 2 years ago, incredibly impactful midseason addition last year. And look, he was hurt. He had a torn pec. No telling how healthy he was, but Wisniewski's a guy that, you know, I don't think there's any rush that you need to bring him back on the roster. Is there?
No, I mean, they brought him back, but you could tell he didn't look 100% with the pec issue he had, and they kept trying to play him out of position because, I mean, he belonged at left guard. That was the spot that he was capable of playing the previous year. So I wasn't surprised that he struggled at times at right guard. So it's unfortunate it worked out that way, but to me, he didn't look 100% healthy, and at the same time, he was playing out of position. So the reality is, if that's how you're going to utilize him, then no. I mean, it's not a good play to be on the roster at that point in that spot if that's how it's going to be utilized. And for the most part, I think they got to get stronger on the offensive line and stouter on the offensive line, especially on the interior anyways.
And then Daniel Kilgore, like we talked, he was not able to unseat Austin Ryder for the starting position. So I don't see him as the answer, but there is another veteran guy on the roster who I thought was playing pretty well and brought some feistiness that offensive line needed. But then Kalechi Osemele hurt not one knee, but both of his knees on the same play in that loss to the Raiders back in October. Is he a guy that you are willing to bring back and you want to see if he's healthy again and can kind of recapture that form of the first 4 or 5 games? Or do the knee issues really scare you off of a guy like that?
I would be willing to bring him back at minimum if it's for depth, and it's for depth. But I don't think financially, I don't know if you can do a big massive contract with that coming off the injury that he is and the age that he is. But if he would want to come back and work on the roster in a prove it type of deal, I would be completely for that. But at the same regard, I think you need to find a lot more on the interior that are like him, that are like that style. I think that's what the Chiefs offense needs to evolve and be successful, is to have somebody that's a physical brute presence, just like Osemele at center and at right guard. I think that would go a long way towards helping them in the run game that they need to have, but also help keep Patrick safe and upright in a lot of ways.
Yeah. And the good news is, look, you can get guys. I'm thinking when you're talking about those road grader types that bring kind of a you know, they bring the lunch pail mentality to the offensive line. One of the guys that I think of that was a real success story for the Chiefs, I thought, was Zach Fulton a couple of years ago, who came in and developed at a guard position. And I want to say he's like a 6th round pick. So, mm-hmm. You know, you can find value in the late rounds for guys like that can come in and make a big difference on the interior of the line, I think.
Yeah, it just takes a little time. And the thing about Fulton is he was always stiff as a board. So he didn't have a lot of bend to him, and they kept always trying to put him at center and try to force him to snap and try to do that. And that poor guy, he struggled with that, and that's not his fault. It's just he knew his skill set. He knew his foot quickness wasn't always there, and he knew that to be able to pick up that blitzing linebacker, he was going to have to move real quick. And sometimes that when they put him at center, that snap went a little bit high because of it. And yeah. I don't blame him. It's another one of those times where he wasn't, in my opinion, in a position to succeed along the offensive line that fit his skill set. So, yeah, I want to see a little bit. I want to see a little bit more road grading on the interior, personally.
Look, NFL passing league. We know it's a passing league now. So let's switch our focus to quarterback, of course, because the Chiefs are desperate need of a quarterback. Now, no, but corner, like secondary and wide receivers. Like the Chiefs have a lot of decisions to make in this area too.
Yeah.
And obviously the way the game is structured now, you've got to be able, you've got to have weapons on the outside and you've got to be able to defend other teams' weapons on the outside. Bashaud Breeland is a guy who he hasn't, I thought he had a chance to maybe earn, you know, a multi-year deal before he had some off the field issues last off season. You know, but he came back. He, you know, he is what he is. He's a physical corner. He's going to pick up some penalties here and there, but he's not, you know, he's a better cover guy than say Orlando Scandrick or some of the other veterans they've had in here. Is he a guy that you think is worth keeping around?
Breeland, I think, is another one of those prove it type of deals to where he's right at that fringe right now to where he's going to be 30 in the 31 range. And like, that's kind of when corners start to have their dive if they're going to have it. And I mean, don't get me wrong. I mean, he's a physical corner. He knows his system. He knows the scheme. He's a good tackler, physical tackler, but let's be honest. He gets grabby. He likes to grab and he gets a lot of holding and pass interference penalties because of his physical style and because he lacks in at times an athletic ability to turn his hips, change direction and explode. He doesn't have that confidence. So when corners do that, they grab sometimes so that they can stay in the receiver's hip pocket. So he gets some flags thrown against him because of that. So I think there's a number, and I think if they go anything over 7 for him, I think that's going to be an issue for them. So I'm curious to see what they end up doing in that regard. But for the most part, I mean, if he wanted to come back on another short-term prove it deal, I'm all for it. But if he's wanting something long-term, I mean, I don't know if he's going to find that on the market either.
Yeah. But the money piece probably means that Charvarius Ward has a better chance of staying on the roster because he's going to be a much cheaper option than Bashaud during the middle of the year. But have you seen enough from Charvarius Ward in years past and still like his tools and his possible upside as a young guy that you think he's worth retaining, or is he a guy that you think the Chiefs should just move on from?
I mean, I think there's still something that they can still have him there at minimum as depth if they need to, especially since I think there's an opportunity just to minimum have him as depth and just kind of utilize him that way to where I would not be against them being like, hey, we're going to use that restricted free agent thing from him and just put it down. I wouldn't be against that, but at the same time, I'm not going to be upset if they move on, because at the same time they have Legarius Sneed available to kind of take the outside spot. You're hoping DeAndre Baker can come back healthy and maybe take the other spot. And then you would have Fenton, and then you kind of have to figure out the other either dime or nickel corner that you want to use in that regard, or the slot corner. And you can find that on the market. It's just a matter of how much it's going to cost. And you can definitely find it in the draft. It's just a matter of the Chiefs have a unique way of building value in their secondary without really having to use high investments at the corner position. So I think there's a lot of opportunity out there to where if they do want to spend that money, I'm totally for it. But I'm not fully against if they end up trying to bring him back on original tender. I wouldn't be surprised on that one.
Yeah. And remember, they drafted Bo Pete Keys last year too. They traded back in to get him, and he wasn't able to see the field, but he's a developmental guy that may have some value. Alex Brown, another guy who's been around with the Chiefs a few years, but he is a restricted free agent as well. But is Alex Brown maybe a guy that you can bring back and hope that he can develop during camp?
If you're bringing him back, I believe he's an exclusive rights free agent. If you bring him back, you're kind of just hoping that he can recover from the knee injury that I believe he had a torn ACL, if I remember correctly. But I know he had a knee injury for sure. You're just kind of hoping he can recover from that and see if he's capable or not. So, I mean, you're taking a, you're just retaining the rights to see if he can be something, and you're hoping he can. But if not, then, I mean, I don't think you lose a lot by investing in that.
Antonio Hamilton was brought in. He was supposed to be a special teams guy, maybe see the field as, you know, like you talked about, as like a third, fourth, fifth corner, you know, depending on situations. You can get another Antonio Hamilton, you know, pretty much anywhere on a vet men deal, can't you?
Yeah, that's one that you needed him to be a strong special teams ace, kind of like Anthony Sherman had been. You needed him to be a player like that. He didn't really show that on a regular basis. And then when they put him in a corner, man, I still remember that blown coverage on that one big play when he was in the it was either the stack or the bunch. I can't remember, but I think it was more of a stack. But man, he just oh, that was a bad play. And that's what people are going to remember about him from the corner position. So yeah, no, I mean, that's something that it they gave it a try, didn't work. You know, you try a different name and see if it can stick this time.
Yeah, re-rack that one. You mentioned Anthony Sherman. He chose to retire. He's another one of those free agent guys. Mm-hmm. But last guy in the secondary, look, Daniel Sorensen is limited in some respects, you know, as far as what he can do. I mean, he's a box safety, right? Like if he's coming downhill, he's great. If you want him to blitz, he can do that. But man, I mean, look, he puts some licks on some people and he comes up with some big plays in some big situations. He's another guy. I'm not giving him anywhere near Tyrann Mathieu money or anything like that. But if you can get him, I think he was on a deal like $6 million a year, something like that. If you knock that number down a little bit and he's comfortable with coming back on, you know, $3-4 million a year, is he a guy that you still want on this Chiefs team?
I personally still think that's too much money for him, but I think he could be one of your special teams aces and kind of replace Sherman in that regard. But also, yeah, I personally think if you're, I wouldn't be comfortable going anything over 2.5 personally a year. I know that sounds bad to say, but it's just for what he can do as a coverage linebacker, basically, is how they kind of use him in some regard. And like you said, as a run support guy, like that's his wheelhouse. And if you're going to do that, then you got to go draft a safety that's got better range so Mathieu can move around and roam around, which you don't have as the third safety right now, whether Sorensen is or isn't on the roster. You just have Juan Thornhill who's got range and Mathieu who's got range, but you like to move around. So then you need another safety who can do that. So if you can find a safety that's more versatile in free agency or draft, then in my opinion, financially, you don't want to spend more than 2.5 on Sorensen playing down in the box and being a special teams ace, hopefully.
Now, we buried the lead a little bit on this one because I'm sure a lot of people have been wanting to know your thoughts on Sammy Watkins.
And, well, that's what a podcast is, Todd.
Well, yeah, we
had
to go through this other discussion to get you to draw you in. And
been waiting that entire time.
But Watkins is a guy, look, you knew he was injury prone when you signed him. He had some big moments in playoff seasons, the playoff games the last couple of years. The injury bug kind of caught up with him at the price that he costs, even for a 1-year deal. It seems like the Chiefs need to allocate that money other places this offseason with the way the salary cap is going to come down a little bit.
Yeah, I was ready to move on from it last year, but I'm really ready for them to move on from it this year. The reason you and I talk about this many times before on here, the reason you're paying him is to show up in the playoffs and to kind of be that difference maker in the divisional round, in the conference championship, in the Super Bowl, if you make it to that point. And the fact he wasn't able to do that, I mean, that was kind of a wasted investment. And the fact that there was many times that they probably could have used him when he was out hurt with a calf injury, it's starting to look like, in some regard, that what's going on with him now is that it's starting to decline, even though he shouldn't be at his age. The decline's starting on his body to where it looks like he's starting to deteriorate more and more per year, to where you wouldn't be surprised. You fully have to mentally expect for him to be out 8 games next year and maybe even part of the playoffs, depending on what happens. So, I mean, I think you can get 2 quality players for the price you ended up paying to bring him back again. So, and I'm talking like free agents that could help this roster. So if I'm in the Chiefs' shoes, I'm finally moving on from that, and I'm spending that money on a receiver that could ideally stay healthier. And if there's another receiver in that regard too, that could kind of, if you can pay for 2 receivers for that price, then I'm all about it.
I'm guessing DeMarcus Robb and Byron Pringle, one of them's coming back. Again, I think Pringle gets the edge there, if only because his contract's going to be cheaper because he's younger and, you know, hasn't hit, is a restricted free agent as opposed to an unrestricted free agent. But are you going to make a case at all that DeMarcus Robinson needs to be on this roster, or no. Or do you think the Chiefs should move on from both of them?
Byron Pringle, I totally get if they do a tender on that one. I, as a restricted free agent, I get that. And I wouldn't be surprised if he's, you know, I fully expect him to be in their plans, both in special teams and trying to see if he can push for that 3 or 4 spot and give him some opportunities, because I don't think they fully exhausted what his potential can or can't be in the offense yet. So I think you give him another opportunity. DeMarcus Robinson, I think they've fully given him every opportunity to succeed in the scheme and in the offense, and he just hasn't been able to step up to the plate other than being a quality run blocker and a solid special teams performer. But I mean, that's kind of where his role begins and ends in this offense. So there, and he'll have one good game per year. You know, he'll have an awesome game where, you know, the Chiefs are able to isolate him against the secondary they're playing, and he'll have, you know, 2-3 touchdown game. And then, you know, you don't hear from him for the other 15 weeks. So, I mean, it's unfortunate, but they give him every opportunity to succeed. I think the reason he was brought back last year is partly because of the pandemic, and they knew they could bring him back. He knew the offense. They weren't going to have to do too much to get him up to speed. And it was just it was at a good financial price and everything for them to, as they said, quote unquote, run it back. And so they ran it back, found out that they need to do something different. So that's what they're going to, I think that's the road they go down.
Three of the team's tight ends, by the way, are free agents as well. Ricky Seals-Jones isn't coming back. I mean, he couldn't even get an active for a game. But Deion Yelder, Nick Kizer, either one of those guys intrigue you enough to keep them around?
Yelder, I think they've given plenty of opportunities to. There's not much there athletically or role player wise that warrants bringing him back. Kizer, I get if you want to have him in as like a potential 3 or depth as a 4 spot if needed, just to kind of be there. So you have somebody else that knows the offense as a tight end. But Ricky Seals-Jones, they gave it a chance to have an athletic tight end in there. Didn't seem like he could really pick up the offense or be able to contribute. So I think that you move on from that. And then I think you've given Yelder plenty of opportunities to prove that he's not going to be a difference maker in your scheme. So you move on from that, you get yourself an athletic tight end that can help. And then I know they brought in your buddy, well, not your buddy, but your Mizzou favorite, Sean Culkin. So, I mean, he's one of the better blocking tight ends. So, I mean, they've got that covered. So now they got to go find an athletic guy that can kind of help. If Travis Kelce, knock on wood, if he were to get hurt, but also just to kind of help alleviate some of the snaps. Because the other thing the Chiefs need to start planning at the tight end position is not only finding an heir apparent for Travis Kelce, but also starting to take back some of Travis's snaps. Man. So he's not out there as much, and starting to plan that out accordingly over the next years so that Travis can play till he's 35 or 36 and he's not playing his 70 to 80 snaps per game. And you start to give him a break so his body doesn't break down over the next couple of years, and you can give him longer time in the league because of it.
A couple running backs and a couple linebackers left to touch on. Damian Wilson, he, a little bit like Daniel Sorensen. He is what he is, right? He's an old school downhill thumping linebacker that is maybe miscast in the modern NFL. Same story a little bit with Ben Neiman. Ben Neiman struggles in pass coverage. The athleticism is maybe not where you need it to be for a linebacker right now in the NFL and what they're asked to do. But either one of those guys, do you see them sticking around?
I personally wouldn't bring either of them back. I love the way Damian Wilson hit, but he's a liability in coverage, and so they always had to rotate, you know, Sorensen in for that in some looks. And, you know, it just like you said, he's just not a fit for the modern NFL passing schemes. And then Ben Neiman, look, I mean, athletically, he can't hang with it, and teams would deliberately attack him at times because they knew he couldn't cover, and they knew athletically he couldn't stand up against him. So I wouldn't be surprised if Neiman got a tender and came back, because they seem to be big fans of him, and with as much as they put him out there that, you know, but if they can upgrade at those spots, I will be ecstatic.
And then Le'Veon Bell, a lot of people were excited when he was brought in, but turns out he's a, you know, mostly an old broken down running back. And then Darrell Williams, though, is a guy on the opposite end who looked like he has recovered and is kind of hitting his stride again after You know, maybe people feared he might be becoming an old broken down running back. So I assume Darrell Williams is a no brainer to bring back, and Le'Veon Bell's a no brainer to move on from.
Yeah, Darrell Williams, whatever tender you got to give him, bring him back. I think that's a smart investment right now. And like you said, with Bell, what explosiveness he had, which wasn't elite to begin with, that's gone. It's not there anymore, and there's just not a lot there. And he needs this particular offensive line to run against, and the Chiefs don't have that. And I don't think that it doesn't seem like there's a lot left in the tank for Le'Veon Bell, and he didn't integrate well in the scheme in general.
Right. Yeah. You're not going to Andy's not going to rebuild the offense around Le'Veon Bell.
No.
You know, so it doesn't make much sense. It was worth a flyer, and you know, it created some midseason excitement last year, but.
Well, it also kind of gave them the bridge until Darrell Williams got healthy, which was kind of what the whole purpose was. Just with the same the year before with LeSean McCoy, you needed somebody to be a bridge until Damian Williams was healthy from his hamstring issue. So they really get that both times. So, but I am kind of curious to see if there's a running back in free agency that they can get at a good price. There's a lot of quality veterans out there. I know they invested in a first round pick and they have Darrell Williams, but if there's one lesson you learn, man,
they still have Damian Chiefs. Williams too, technically.
Yeah, we'll see. We'll definitely see how that works out.
Go check out the other podcast for thoughts on that one. So, all right. Anything else you want to add on this one, Nick?
I think that's everybody. I hope it's everybody.
No, I think we've covered the game. There were like 26 players, you know, that the Chiefs had under contract last year who are no longer under contract. I mean, and like, obviously none of them are the big ones. If you want to know what the Chiefs need to do, maybe with restructuring or options they have for restructuring some contracts to create more space to sign some of those veterans, like we talked about, that's already been covered on another podcast. We've already talked about the different roster needs and what the biggest areas of need for the Chiefs are. So, you know, feel free to stack these up and cycle through them, you know, and as the off season goes along, we're going to keep, you know, we're going to pivot to more draft coverage and looking at prospects and who we think might fit for the Chiefs. And as we get closer to them, but that's probably an April, you know, late March, early April project. So for now, you get what you get.
Yes, you tell them, Todd. You tell them we got other things to do with our time that don't always involve watching film.
Well, look, I mean, next week is when free agency actually opens. Obviously, it does not look like the Chiefs are going to get J.J. Watts. You can cross him off your wish list.
Oh, tough break.
But, you know, there's some intriguing names out there. And obviously, you know, a couple years ago, you know, the trade for Frank Clark and then the signing of Tyrann Mathieu is really what triggered the end of a 50-year Super Bowl drought. So we'll see. You know, Brett Veach, last year it was the signings that he worked some magic with. This year it may have to be some veteran deals, maybe a trade that you don't see coming, but you know, we'll see whether Veach can conjure any magic this offseason to kind of reshape that roster and the way the Chiefs need it to be reshaped to be competitive again next year.
Yeah, well, we'll see if I have to budget for another trophy in next year. We'll know. At least I got time to budget for it.
Yeah. Well, all right. Hey, I don't have anything else. So with that, I guess take care, kid.